From the Quantum Fiber Studio, this is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We've been talking a lot about the offseason power rankings, whether it's a team power ranking or specific position power rankings. Everybody's doing it. It's a lot of fun just to get different perspectives on that. And one that caught our eye is one by this man, Frank Schwab, Yahoo Sports senior NFL writer, who now joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hello, Frank. You just did your offseason power rankings, and you had the Seahawks at 21, and I've got to say, you're not unique in that there seems to be a sense of pessimism around this team that I link to the uncertainty of the coaching staff. I don't think anybody knows what to expect with Mike McDonald, first-time head coach. You got first-time coordinators. There's just a lot of unknown. I'm curious what went into, you know, your evaluation of this team to think, all right, they're probably not as good as they were last year, even though the defense was atrocious last year. Now you've got one of the great defensive minds, presumably, is your head coach. What was your rationale for 21 in the Seahawks?
Yeah, and to be honest, when I do rankings, I think it's a little bit different than I do predictions, because, you know, what does a team deserve, right? And right now we have a Seahawks team that has a head coach, offensive coordinator, and defensive coordinator who have never held those jobs in the NFL. Their offensive coordinator has never even spent a day in the NFL before he got hired. So there's just uncertainty. And you take, you know, Geno stepping back a little bit last year, and heck, Seattle, you know, I apparently considered, hey, what do we, you know, what's the cap ramifications? Do we just move on and decide to bring him back and all that kind of stuff? So I just think there's a lot of, you know, uncertainty. It's a lot of respect toward Pete Carroll, too, who I think got, you know, he was unconventional. We got great things out of that Seattle team, right? So you look at all that, and you say, you know, I need to be a little skeptical. Prediction-wise, I think Seattle might be really good. Yes, it's an unknown, but I think Mike McDonald, I mean, his kind of defensive genius is kind of really growing steam. Look how many of his assistants have gotten jobs elsewhere. People want a part of this Mike McDonald defense. And I think if Seattle picks up the scheme quickly, which the Ravens did 2 years ago, so it's not out of the line that they could really take to the scheme right away. The defense makes a big improvement. The offense has a ton of stars. The offensive line should be healthier. I think the Seattle team could make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to be better than the 49ers. That's way too much to ask. But could they make the playoffs and feel really, really good about, you know, Mike McDonald after his first season as coach? I think that could happen, yes. I think, Mike McDonald, NFL Coach of the Year, I could see that happening, because he usually comes from a first-time head coach who leads his team to the playoffs that didn't make the playoffs the year before. And I think that could happen with the Seahawks. I think the world of Mike McDonald, but as far as the rankings go, I just kind of have to see it first before I really am move them up.
Yeah, Frank, this is Brady Henderson. I actually cover the Seahawks for ESPN, and I'm filling in on the show today. Mm-hmm. And I agree with a lot of what you said there about just a lot of the newness on the coaching staff. And a lot of these guys either haven't been in the NFL at all or are in their, you know, big time roles for the first time. And I think that it's a very fair point about sort of needing to see it in order to believe it. That's the sort of the coaching inexperience aspect of it. I'm curious for your take on just if you were evaluating these rosters and stacking rosters up against each other, where do you think Seattle's roster would rank 1 to 32? Ballpark,
it's
obviously.
Hard. Yeah, of course. It's hard because there's a lot to like. I think they have a lot of blue chip guys, and if you prefer that, you'd have them ranked a little higher. You know, guys like DK and the running back combination and Witherspoon. And they have legit dudes, right? But it's kind of that middle tier of the roster. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about, you know, Leonard Williams and what they paid him? Does his salary come into effect here? Because I think he got overpaid. Do you like Geno? I like him probably a little bit, but I do have some concerns about his decision-making after last year. So I kind of put them right maybe a little bit ahead of the middle, I mean, in that 14 to 16 range. But you could convince me to go a little bit higher just because their stars are really, really good. And I just don't know. That's part of the problem, you know, I'm having with the Seahawks and trying to evaluate them is, why wasn't the defense better last year? Pete Carroll is a good defensive coach. They do have really good talent on that side of the ball. Why did it come together for them better? And can Mike McDonald get that out of them, especially in year one. He does, you know, the Ravens picked up, but it is a complicated scheme where pretty much everybody on that defense needs to know every job and be able to execute it based on the play call. So, you know, just as far as roster goes, I probably had, like I said, a little bit above average in that 14 to 16 range. But if you wanted to tell me, no, they're way better than that because of these blue chip guys, I don't have a problem with that. This Seattle was one of my kind of stand on a hill teams last year. I even, you know, you can, I hope that it's been burned from the internet, but I do have, you know, the podcast clips from us or whatever, where I'm saying I think Seattle could beat the 49ers for the NFC West. Obviously didn't happen, but I just wonder, can McDonald get the most out of this roster? Did the voice of Carroll just become stale? Did some of his approaches just become stale and they needed somebody like Grubb to come in with a really, really modern offense? It just makes the Seahawks such a confusing team to figure out before the season. It makes them fun, too. There's so many unknowns here. But clearly, I don't think talent is an issue. I think they have enough talent to be a playoff team. It's just how quickly this coaching staff kind of adapts and how the players adapt to them in year one.
You gave them an offseason grade of a C. What is it you liked? What didn't you like, or you thought they could have done better in the off season?
I just think it was average. Like I am a tough grader. I do take it literally that C is average. I didn't hate it. You know, some people say, "Oh, C, that's terrible." I got by at the University of Wisconsin on C's. It can happen.
It's C's fine. Get degrees,
and,
as they say.
Exactly. That's been my motto in life. So, you know, I some of the things they did were fine. The Leonard Williams thing does bother me just because I think it was a total overpay because they traded so much for him and you have to justify it. And that's a bad way to go through things. But ultimately, I think they did fine in the offseason. I think one thing that really I did like about it is so many times, and this is a John Schneider thing probably, but so many times when a new coaching staff comes in, they need their guys, right? Quote unquote, I need my guys. I covered Josh McDaniels in Denver, and he basically is out of a job in the NFL because of that thought process. Whereas I think Mike McDonald came in and said, we don't need to really shake everything up. We can bring most of this team back. I just need to coach them. I need to get the most out of these guys. So part of the reason I actually like the Seahawks offseason is they didn't just overhaul everything for the sake of overhauling it. And Mike McDonald didn't need 14 former Ravens players because they know the Raven way or whatever. So I actually don't mind what Seattle did this offseason, but I think you guys would probably agree. It was kind of just there. It was kind of, all right, that's a fine offseason. Good for them for not blowing everything up and starting over again. But nothing about it really gets me too excited.
Yeah, that is an interesting point you make about how a lot of times when teams change head coaches, that comes with a rebuild. And I would say that the Seahawks offseason roster retooling was probably somewhere between just your typical roster turnover that teams have in any given year and then the rebuilds that often come with the coaching changes. It's probably somewhere in between there. The core of this team is still largely intact. And that's a team that went 9-8 the past two seasons and a team that obviously has been, you know, the 49ers have had their number. And I think the Rams have also had their number. I think it's pretty clear that the 49ers, at least talent-wise, are still pretty far ahead of the Seahawks. And maybe Mike McDonald and the new coaching staff helps close that gap. But I think there's still a pretty big gap there. I'm curious what you think about the gap between, or if there is a gap between the Seahawks and the Rams. How do you think those two teams stack up right now?
Pretty similarly. Like you said, the 49ers is kind of in a class by themselves right now. That's probably the most talented roster in the NFL. And obviously, a couple breaks here or there, they're Super Bowl champions right now. NFC champions still isn't that bad. Then you get down to the Rams and Seahawks. And look, the Rams really impressed me last year. I thought the Rams were going to win like three games last year. I'll be honest with you. I looked at that roster and said, I don't know how this team wins games. And they obviously got some huge seasons out of kind of nowhere, out of young players, Puka Nacua being number one, but also guys like Kobe Turner. And, you know, they just came together so fast. I think McVay had such a good season coaching that team. You come back to this season, and I think that they can keep that going. McVay seems rejuvenated. That team, you know, I mean, they did get a lot out of their draft class last year, and Matthew Stafford looked great and all this kind of stuff. So I think the Seahawks are going, if I had to pick between the two, which team's going to be better this year, I'd probably pick the Seahawks, but not by much. I think they're right there, you know, and then you have the Cardinals kind of, they're not off the radar. That Cardinals team is going to present some problems to a lot of opponents with their offense. So I kind of have it just the 49ers way out in front, Seahawks 2A and then the Rams 2B. I think they're that close. And then the Cardinals fourth, but yet one of those teams that's going to – they're going to score like 30 points in a lot of games and lose a lot of them because their defense is so bad.
Hey, what is your impression of Geno? He's a polarizing figure out here. Some think he's very good. Some think he's just a guy who's holding the place. I think we've seen both, where his first season as a starter, he was just a house of fire and got off to such a great start. And then toward the end of that season, started to regress a little bit. And then last year, took a step back. So as you view him, he's not a young guy by football standards. He's not old, but he's kind of in that no man's land where he's going to be 34, 35 years old. And next year, according to Spotrac, his cap hit is $38.5 million. So is he a guy you look at saying he needs to have a tremendous year for them to consider what they're going to do with him next year? Or do you feel like this is the last year for him? How do you view Geno and the Seahawks?
Yeah, I think it's probably the last year. But, things could be worked out contract-wise if he plays well enough and they want to bring him back. I think Geno's kind of somewhere between the two seasons in that I think that he came in with no expectations 2 years ago, taking over for, a guy who, well, he gets booed there now. He is a franchise icon. Russell Wilson had a great 9 Pro Bowl run there. And then you're taking it, the expectations were so low for Geno that I think he was just, and this is trying to read, read between the lines. You guys know better than me. But it seemed like he was a guy, it just kind of was house money. Well, he just played so loose and so, I don't want to say carefree, but you know what I mean. Like he didn't seem like he was pressing at all. It just seemed like he was out there. Really got in a nice groove, played well. And then I think he came back the second season, more expectations, more money. And I just think he pressed a little bit. And the offensive line injuries really did not help him. And I think that's the key to this. Figuring out Geno is figuring out how much did the problems on the offensive line with the injuries affect him and affect his decision making. And he's a guy who, you look at some of the metrics, he had as many big time throws as just about any quarterback in football last year. But he also had as many turnover worthy plays as any quarterback in football last year. That to me tells me that he's still a good player, but he was just pressing way too much with more expectations on him with the contract and coming off the playoff season. So I think he settles somewhere in the middle. You can win with a guy like Geno. You don't need Patrick Mahomes to win big in the NFL. It helps. You prefer it, but there's a lot of teams. Look, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl a couple of years ago, right? You can win pretty. Nobody thinks the world of Jared Goff, and he had the Lions a few minutes from going to a Super Bowl last year. You can win with guys who aren't necessarily bona fide top five quarterbacks if you got really, really good roster around them. I think Seattle's could be. We could look up at the end of the year and be like, Geno had a good year because of, JSN took another step forward in his development year two, and Lockett still had something left, and Noah Fant even came along, with a bigger role and played well. Geno's good enough that I don't think he's got a liability. But he's also not the quarterback who you look, and say, this guy put the entire franchise on his shoulders and lifted them to the NFC Championship game or anything. So somewhere in the middle there, and that's just fine.
Yahoo Sports senior NFL writer Frank Schwab has been our guest here with Wyman and Bob. Frank, thanks so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely, guys. I appreciate it.
There you go. Again, Frank Schwab, if you guys missed that conversation, tuned in the middle of it. It'll be on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. Just click the podcast tab. Scroll down to our picture. Click on that, and it's right there waiting for you. Make sure you click subscribe. That's the key to the entire thing. And a reminder that Seahawks training camp starts next week. We want to send one of you and three friends to watch camp in person. It's a very cool experience. We'll see. We're all going to learn what it's like this year with a new head coach. Is there going to be music and play-by-play happening, or is it going to be toned down? We'll find out together. You guys can find out, and all you need to do is open the Seattle Sports app and click the Win tab to find out more. Now, if you don't already have the app, all you have to do is text the word APP, A-P-P. Text that to 866-979-3776, and we'll send you a link to download it. The contest runs through Sunday, July 21st, so it's coming to an end soon. Seattle Sports is your home for the Seahawks and for all training camp coverage. So there you go. There's Frank Schwab joining us. And another ranking we talked about yesterday is Bill Barnwell. Mm-hmm. And he did skill position ranking. So he grouped in, he went wide receiver, running back, and tight end. Didn't put quarterbacks in there. So just those three position groups. He had Seattle at number 8, which you go, okay, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Top 10, number 8. Difference was last year he had him number 4. Mm. And we talked about it a bit yesterday, and people were going, well, they lost Disley and Parkinson. I'm like, they had three combined touchdowns and less than 500 combined receiving yards.
Out of those two guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were not impactful in the way of production. Yeah, blocking, things like that. And I don't blame them. They just, tight ends were just not a big part of what they did. What would you say is the biggest reason you'd look at that position group, which hasn't changed? It's JSN again. It's DK. It's Tyler. It's Ken Walker. It's Charbonnet. It's Noah Fant. The only difference would be at tight end. Those two guys are gone. Why from four last year to eight?
Yeah,
what do you think?
Yeah, and that may not necessarily be Barnwell thinking so much less of the Seahawks group of skill position guys so much as it is other teams elevating. And, you know, I would say, look, even if you feel like the you know, Lockett is 1 year older and didn't have the season last year that sort of we were accustomed to seeing, well, you could say that Jaxon Smith-Njigba looks like he's poised for a breakout in year two, and that may be offset whatever, you know, sort of Lockett you're losing in terms of production out of Lockett. So I think the receiver core, to me, that aspect of it, that receiver core is probably still as good coming into this year as it was coming into last year. I agree with you. I don't think they lost a lot in terms of firepower at tight end. Now, Colby Parkinson got quite a bit of money in free agency, at least for, you know, a number two, number three tight end, which he's been for the, you know, throughout his career. He got paid a lot. I think that was more so a projection of, hey, this guy's 6 foot seven and he's 25 years old and his best football is probably still ahead of him. You know, Noah Fant, they gave him more money than I thought they would, frankly. And I think that is a reflection of them feeling like, hey, the reason this guy, the production wasn't there was because that was kind of a crowded tight end room. And when you got three stud receivers, there's only so many balls to go around, especially when you're so lousy on third down that you just don't have that many plays. You know, and obviously you want to run the ball to begin with. And so look, the money that they paid Noah Fant, they better throw the ball to him. Otherwise, that's just, I don't know what you're doing there.
Yeah, 43 targets last year, 32 catches, 414 yards. He didn't have a touchdown.
Zero touchdowns. Yeah.
I'm surprised. I thought he had at least one, but no touchdowns for Noah Fant. And he had two for Parkinson on 25 catches, 247 yards. And Disley, 17 catches, 172 yards, one touchdown.
Yeah, but again, I think, you know, some of the production was, you know, this coming at the expense of other guys there. I mean, you didn't get a ton out of Parkinson and Disley receiving-wise, but I think what you did get out of them, that was taken out of Noah Fant. I think they're going to have three tight ends on the roster this year. I think it's going to be Noah Fant, A.J. Barner, the fourth-round pick, and Farrell Brown, the veteran they signed from New England in free agency. I don't mean to sell A.J. Barner short because he's a rookie and you don't know. I mean, he could end up being a receiver. Remember, people didn't really think Will Disley was much of a receiving tight end coming out of college.
Yeah, he's a great blocker.
Yeah, and he actually, his first couple seasons, he was quite productive as a receiver. So that's not to sell A.J. Barner short, but he seems more like a blocking tight end.
Same with Farrell Brown.
And same with Farrell Brown. I think John Schneider has said that they thought he was one of the, two or three best blocking tight ends in the NFL. So what that tells me is that in terms of that group, Noah Fant's going to be the clear focal point in terms of tight ends, in terms of pass catching options there. So whereas those other guys sort of took away from his targets last year, I don't think that's going to happen as much. And again, they paid him $22 million, or they signed him to a two-year $22 million deal. And when you're paying a tight end more than $10 million a year, that's a sign that you're going to throw the ball to him quite a bit.
Which is something they haven't done with the position group for a number of years. And in years past, even back to Zach Miller, he came in off a Pro Bowl year with the Raiders and had 50-plus catches and was productive. And then when he came here, he became a de facto O-lineman because the O-line was so bad.
Yep.
And I feel like that's anytime they even Jimmy Graham's the most productive tight end in the history of this organization.
Yeah. How about that?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it tells you the tight end just has never been a big productive spot for this team since its inception. It's just not been that.
Yeah. And I remember doing some research on this a couple years ago. And I mean, that the numbers would sort of tell you exactly what your eyes would tell you over the last few years is that, you know, in terms of other teams, they ranked pretty far, or at least during this window that I looked at it, they ranked pretty far down the list in terms of teams that utilize tight ends in the passing game. The best theory I could come up with is that was to some degree not putting this all on Russell Wilson, but that was to some degree a product of the fact that Russell Wilson really didn't throw the ball to the middle of the field nearly as much as other quarterbacks did. And, you know, the logical reason would be that as a shorter quarterback, you know, the sight lines are a little bit tougher in the short middle area of the field, which is where tight ends tend to do a lot of their damage. And so I think a pretty plausible theory is that Russell Wilson just he preferred to throw the ball more to the perimeter, and that obviously means more wide receiver targets than it does tight ends. Now, I do think that is a plausible explanation, but that didn't necessarily change a whole lot under Geno Smith
No. The
last couple of years. Now, again, part of that reason could be is that, A, you're playing for an offense or playing for a coach in Pete Carroll who, you know, wants to run the ball first, and then you know, you got three stud receivers, and then again, you've just been pretty terrible on third down the last few years, and there's just not that many plays to go around.
All right, coming up, we'll get all of his insight on the top 10 rankings at every position in the NFL. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler is going to join us next. It's Wyman and Bob with Brady Henderson, and this is Seattle Sports on 710.
Sign up for Mariners Mail to receive pre-sale offers, exclusive content, and more directly to your inbox for free. Mariners Mail subscribers get first dibs on all the latest ticket news and action from T-Mobile Park. Go to mariners.com/insider to join the club today.
Have you considered surgery or even joint replacement? Hey, it's Dave Wyman, and before you make that decision, see Dr. Mark Wagner, MD, at Seattle Sports and Regenerative Medicine. Why? Because he gives it to you straight. Dr. Wagner said my right knee needs replacement, and I appreciate his honesty and expertise. My left knee is fine right now, but the minute it isn't, I'm heading to Dr. Wagner for his expert opinion. I want to avoid another surgery, and I've heard so many patients rave about results from their 90-minute outpatient stem cell procedure with Dr. Wagner. He's a board-certified Seattle physician with over 30 years of experience and has performed more than 20,000 stem cell procedures, using a person's own stem cells to regenerate cartilage in their own joints. People with severe osteoarthritis, even bone on bone, are back doing what they enjoy without pain and without surgery. Whether it's a shoulder, hip, elbow, ankle, wrist, or knee, before choosing surgery, see Dr. Mark Wagner first. Go to drmarkwagnermd.com.
When you're on the pitch clock and don't have time for your favorite Seattle sports shows, listen to the podcasts on demand.
How about that? Unbelievable.
Who would have thought?
Every hour, every interview, every look behind the scenes.
Dan Wilson's the new skipper.
This is a window. This is a time where we can get it done, and that's the hope. That's the vision for this club.
Find us on seattlesports.com, the Seattle Sports app, or wherever you get podcasts.
It is clear it was the right decision to keep your pitching staff as whole as possible.
Never miss a minute of Seattle Sports, the home of the Mariners. From the Quantum Fiber Studio, you're listening to Wyman and Bob.
Weekdays 2 to 7.
On Seattle Sports and 97.3 FM HD2.
Spent a lot of time talking about some of the lists that have come out, the rankings for you football fans out there that love to talk about it, see what the national perspective. I'm always interested in the national perspective. We spent a lot of time talking about the rankings, top 10 positions and everything. We talked about a guy here in Jeremy Fowler, who you're very familiar with,
yep,
who is putting together lists of different position groups. And as you explained, he's responsible for every single one of them. These are all his ideas. This is how he feels about every single player in the league. And he's with us to defend himself now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline.
I didn't say that, Jeremy.
Jeremy Fowler of ESPN is with us. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, in all honesty, Brady was going out of his way to say, no, this is Jeremy talking to other people and sort of collecting answers and coming up with a collective top 10 based on their answers, not your perception of who should be where. But I'm guessing that doesn't stop football fans from coming after you when you disrespect their players, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Most media members understand the exercise, but a lot of fans don't, unless it's favorable to their team and they like to highlight it. Ooh, look what the execs and the scouts said. But if it's one they don't like, then they blame me.
Jeremy, I'm gonna guess that this is not the first radio interview you've done over the last couple of weeks. Is that a fair guess?
Yeah, Brady, pretty fair. Mostly the last couple of days since the quarterback rankings came out. That's when it sort of ratcheted up a notch. That's always fun. So we did receivers today. So those are two of the sexier positions. So.
Yeah.
It's been good. It's a nice little talking point before the season when it's a kind of a dull time.
Absolutely, yeah. And before we get into specific questions about the Seahawks who did or did not make the list and different the positional rankings themselves, I'm just curious kind of about the process that you go through in doing this, and what is maybe the most interesting or eye-opening part of this whole polling, voting process to you as you know, this is something that you've done for, what, 4 or 5 straight years now? Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's the 6th year, I'm going to say. No, 5th year. Yeah, 2020 was the first, so... Yeah, it's always pretty revealing, you know. It's interesting the biases some people have, or maybe they love the guy out of the draft who underachieved and then started to play well so they can validate their bias. Or if they just didn't like a guy and they had to rank him in the top 10 before, but he has a bad year, they can take him out, you know. But I think most of them just go by, you know, a guy's traits and, you know, how sort of scheme flexible is he. You know, can you just put him in any situation and he's going to thrive, and not only thrive but help carry your team. So it's usually what it comes down to. That they, I would say scouts especially look at that more than like the average fan that might go off of production or maybe what they see on a Sunday.
Yeah, and Brady was sort of walking me through that because initially, like the quarterback list, I was telling him this couldn't be based on just who these guys were last year coming into this season. Otherwise, Aaron Rodgers wouldn't be number 8. He only had 4 snaps. So I'm going, okay, that doesn't make sense to me when I'm looking at it. The other one that stuck out to me, which again is it being here as a Seahawks fan is weird for me to defend a 49er, is Brock Purdy didn't make the top 10, yet he's the highest rated quarterback. He's got the highest QBR in the league. He's top 10 in just about every conceivable category as a quarterback, yet he didn't make the top 10. Was that odd to you at all, or is it not enough of a track record? What do you chalk that up to?
Well, I would say I chalk it up to the fact that a lot of evaluators look at him as a system quarterback, the dreaded S word, right? Now, is that unfair? Probably. And they say he's a playmaker, and certainly he's been tremendous since he's been in the league, but it goes back to, like, end of a game, you need a guy to sort of make a play for you, carry your team, or have the sort of athleticism to do that. You know, Mahomes, Allen, Stafford, a lot of those guys have that, where Purdy's not necessarily that quarterback. Not that he can't make plays, it's just, you know, he's in a great system with a lot of playmakers around him, which does help him shine. Now, to his credit, he's played phenomenal. 17-4 as a starter, 4 playoff wins, best QBR in the league. But look at Dak Prescott. He had one of the best seasons last year, too, and he was number 10. So sometimes it does come down to, like, hey, you're playing quarterback at a really high level, but if I'm on the kickball field picking best players, like we're in elementary school, you're going to kind of pick the guys that you feel like are just, you know, those dudes that are transcendent talents. Like Justin Herbert, that's why he's always going to be high. Just, that, you know, Jim Harbaugh took the Chargers job for one reason and one reason only. It was Justin Herbert.
Now, Jeremy, you've done, I believe, every position so far except for cornerbacks. You did running backs, defensive tackles, edge rushers, safeties, tight ends, interior linemen, tackles, quarterbacks, off-ball linebackers, receivers. The one position I think that is yet to come is cornerbacks, and I'm going to take an educated guess and say that we're going to see Devin Witherspoon somewhere inside the top 10, but he would be, if that is the case, he would be the only Seahawk on the top 10 list, which I think is interesting. You know, when you compare that to San Francisco, which has 9 guys so far inside the top 10, I'm curious what you heard from evaluators that you spoke with about Witherspoon, and then a similar question about Tariq Woolen, I should say, if anybody had any interesting thoughts on Tariq Woolen and sort of where he fits into that cornerback mix.
Yeah, Seattle's in an interesting spot there because it's not like they don't have talent or are described as a team that's close to being pretty loaded up with some good talent. You know, like they drafted well post Russell Wilson, a lot of good pieces in place. They just don't have a lot of premier guys, top 10 type players. And so, yes, you were right about Devin Witherspoon. He will be in the top 10. He was on a lot of top 10 ballots. He didn't necessarily get a lot of top 5 votes, but he was on a lot of ballots, and so that got him in. I'm sure those will come. One scout called him the toughest corner in the league. Like, he's just incredibly physical, as you know. And then Tariq Woolen, he was I don't think he was an honorable mention, but he was very close. He was kind of in that 15 range somewhere. So got a lot of votes. You know, some knocks on his tackling and some of his coverage, but I think for the most part, he's considered a high-end cornerback.
Just looking at this team as a whole, Jeremy, what do you think a reasonable expectation is based on all of the unknown. I keep throwing that out there that there, I think a lot of people are looking at this team going, well, it's been Pete Carroll and his system philosophy for 14 years, and now it's a first-time head coach and a first-time OC and a first-time defensive coordinator. There's just so much unknown with what they're going to look like under this regime. Do you have any sense of what it may look like to you, to expectation-wise?
Well, if I'm forecasting out, I would say the defense, just based on what Mike McDonald did in 2 years in Baltimore, like, you know, the defense is going to be stout. And he's got a lot of pieces to play with. Like we talked about, they might not have those necessarily top 10 names, but they have a lot of athletic pieces to kind of move around. You know, in Baltimore, McDonald had Kyle Hamilton, a safety, who was sort of a do-it-all player. So I'm curious how he uses chess pieces like that to make it work. So I expect them to be very competitive and in the playoff mix, just based on that and the fact that you know on offense what you're getting. Tyler Lockett can still play. DK Metcalf wasn't a big presence in my ratings this year compared to years past. I think some are not necessarily questioning him, but just, you know, the route tree, the route running ability hasn't isn't as complete as some others on the list, I would say. So, but you still know that he's a force of nature that can take it 80 yards in any play. So, running backs galore. Some questions about the offensive line, but I think pound for pound is enough there where I expect them to be back in the mix of the playoffs and at least for a wild card. We know Geno Smith can play, and I was surprised he didn't get any votes. So it's an interesting team. It's kind of a exercise in how you can build a roster in different ways. They're not going for those big names that you have to pay $25 million a year to necessarily, you know. They're going for value, draft picks, and then pick their spots with like a Leonard Williams or Draymond Jones or guys like that, depending on where they see fit. You know, defensive line is obviously important to them. They didn't spend on offensive line, you know, so they kind of had to get some journeyman guys there in the middle. So that's an interesting tactic, but they must feel like, you know, pound for pound, those guys can get it done for a cheaper contract. So it's an interesting proposition, but there's definitely enough talent there.
He is ESPN senior NFL reporter Jeremy Fowler. Jeremy, thanks so much for the time. And once again, you'll be happy to know your friend Brady went a long way in defending your top tens and making sure that the blame was not pointed at you, that you're just the messenger here.
Brady's always looking out. I'm going to be in Seattle for camp in a couple weeks, so look forward to it. I'm going to have to check out this what hotline are we on? The Emerald Queen hotline?
The Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook hotline. That's right.
Oh. Might have to go check that out while I'm in town.
There
checking
you go.
Out the Seahawks.
Yeah, do it. It's a good time out there. We look forward to meeting you when you come out here. Thanks so much for the time, Jeremy.
Hey, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
See you, Jeremy.
There you go. There's Jeremy Fowler, ESPN senior NFL reporter, who's going to be out here and at a card table near you.
Great teammate. One of my absolute favorite people at ESPN.
Yeah.
Great reporter. Great guy.
Yeah. And again, he's just compiling all the votes. He's just putting it out there, compiling it so that these aren't his votes. In terms of this guy's eighth, I got this guy one. This is based on all of his conversations.
And, yep, and he's doing all the write-ups. And you got to be very plugged in to have access to that many, you know, executives and coaches. And again, I think some players are involved in this voting too. Like, you got to be a very plugged-in reporter to have that many sources to tap into. You know, not just guys that you've met once, but guys that you know well enough to where you can say, hey, can you help me out with this project I'm working on? So, Jeremy, again, I called him a great reporter. Part of the reason he's a great reporter, he is very plugged in and has a very deep list of sources around the NFL.
All right, good stuff from him. Meanwhile, it's What If Wednesday. We play the hypothetical on Wednesdays. And then the hypothetical question is, what if Alex Rodriguez had left Seattle in a different manner? We'll get into that coming up. It's Wyman and Bob with Brady Henderson in for Wyman. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
The Mariners are all about giving you more baseball for your buck. With Mariners Value Games, you can snag seats for as little as $10 to select games all season long. To get your tickets and check out the complete Mariners Value Game schedule, go to mariners.com/valuegames.
Have you considered surgery or even joint replacement? Hey, it's Dave Wyman, and before you make that decision, see Dr. Mark Wagner, MD, at Seattle Sports and Regenerative Medicine. Why? Because he gives it to you straight. Dr. Wagner said my right knee needs replacement, and I appreciate his honesty and expertise. My left knee is fine right now, but the minute it isn't, I'm heading to Dr. Wagner for his expert opinion. I want to avoid another surgery, and I've heard so many patients rave about results from their 90-minute outpatient stem cell procedure with Dr. Wagner. He's a board-certified Seattle physician with over 30 years of experience and has performed more than 20,000 stem cell procedures, using a person's own stem cells to regenerate cartilage in their own joints. People with severe osteoarthritis, even bone on bone, are back doing what they enjoy without pain and without surgery. Whether it's a shoulder, hip, elbow, ankle, wrist, or knee, before choosing surgery, see Dr. Mark Wagner first. Go to drmarkwagnermd.com.
We are Seattle Sports. 710 AM on your radio. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app. Get new videos, podcasts, and articles on the Seahawks and Mariners from your favorite Seattle sports personalities daily.
What?
It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt.
Wyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
It is What If Wednesday, presented by Mazda of Everett, where we play the hypothetical game. We do this in honor of the late, great John Clayton. Where Brady, I'm sure you probably heard a time or two where we try to throw a hypothetical his way and he just would not entertain it. Just would dig his heels in and go, John, what if they did this? Well, it never happened. But hypothetically, let's say they did this. Well, it wouldn't happen. But John, we're just playing. He wouldn't do it. It was just hilarious and sometimes frustrating.
He wouldn't dole out fantasy football advice on his Saturday show, and he would not get into hypotheticals.
No, or talk uniforms. Yeah. That was the other thing.
That's right.
So we'd always do this before, because he would join us at 4 o'clock. So we'd do this before we got to him, because he just wouldn't partake. So this is in honor of the late, great John Clayton. But we play the hypothetical, and today's question is, in honor of Alex Rodriguez. Had a conversation with Brock and Salk yesterday, talked about a bunch of different things, and they're still, you know, we played some clips yesterday, and there are texts coming in, and people still hate him. And what if he left in a different way? Now, people were mad because of how he left. They felt like he lied, that it wasn't about the money, that he wanted to play for a winner, and then he took the money and went and played for the Rangers, who ended up being bad, even though I think, and people could double-check me on this, they had won the Division III of the previous five seasons, so it wasn't like he left here to go play for this version of the A's.
Right.
He also got offered an amount of money that I don't think anybody considered possible back then. He got $252 million, a quarter of a billion. Quarter of $1 billion. And people are like, well, he should have just said it was for the money. Be honest. Had he come out and said, guys, I wanted to stay in Seattle, they just offered me $250 million. I can't say no. People are going to go, you're greedy. There was no right answer. People's feelings were hurt because their superstar that was brought up through their system and developed here and had a phenomenal rookie season where he should have been the MVP, and then he ultimately elects to leave. It's like a scorned lover syndrome. It's like, get out of here. We don't like you. And they've held on to that for decades now. They still hate him.
I've always wondered how legitimate that disdain is. And is it just something that you feel like you have to do as a fan? Like you have to be mad at the guy that left? Or is that a legitimate anger? I've also wondered how much of that is, you know, joining a division rival. Did that play into it? I tend to disagree with you about the what if, in terms of if he had just said, as you posed, if he had just said, yeah, hey, I wanted to stay with the Mariners, but they offered me this life-changing sum of money that, and I think he could have even said, look, put yourself in my shoes. I think you would have done the same thing. I think anybody would have done the same thing. I think that may have not have been like the most palatable response, but I think it would have been, I think a lot of people would have agreed with that. Now, I sort of equate this to what the guys who have jumped from the PGA Tour to Live.
Yeah.
And all this nonsense about we want to grow the game. No, you don't. You don't
truckload of money.
You don't give two you-know-whats about growing the game when you're going to go play on the CW, you're going to go play on a tour that's televised on the CW net, whatever it is, that nobody watches. Nobody watches Live Golf.
Right.
Okay. So you don't care about growing the game. You did it for the money. And there was this one, I think a British player, who's an older British player. I think his name is Richard Bland. And he said, look, I did it for the money. They offered me this crazy amount of money. Nobody has gotten on Richard Bland's case about leaving. I mean, if you just be honest with people, I think that goes a long way. Now, people might still be upset about it. Maybe still some people would have been upset because it's the Rangers, because it, you know, it's a division rival and everything. But I think he would have ticked. I don't think the resentment would have been quite as strong if he was honest. Some of it is you just can't win.
Yeah, some of it is just you hurt the feelings of fans who loved and adored you and thought you were going to be here forever, and you then turned your back on them and left. And they're like, what about us? What about me? Their feelings are hurt. So they've hung on to it for decades. And as you pointed out, there's probably some young fans today that are like, wait, why do we hate him again?
Yeah.
Why does everybody hate? Oh, okay. He was greedy? Okay.
Oh, like, okay. Got greedy. A big contract?
Yeah. I said it back then. It's not a popular opinion, but saying if you were offered a quarter of a billion, you say you wouldn't take it, you're either lying or you're dumb. Those are your only two options. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It wasn't even in the same hemisphere as the other offers he was getting. The other offers weren't in the same hemisphere as this one. It wasn't like he left for $2 million more.
Do we have any idea what the Mariners offered him?
I think it was it's somewhere 113, 120, something like that in total. I mean, it was not even close. It was not even.
Okay. Done deal.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't even in the same world. It was so anyway. It's carried over. It's still last today. We're seeing people texting in yesterday in response to his appearance on the station, and you know, bleep that guy, and he's a liar, and he's a cheater. Well, that was after he left here, and he certainly has owned up to those mistakes. But he, in that conversation, he gives an answer as to why he ultimately left Seattle.
You know, I honestly, look, Brock, I came from, I saw my mother collect food stamps at the age of 12. I came from the very bottom, right? So my hero was my mother. When somebody offers you $252 million, this is not an indictment towards the Mariners or towards me or towards anybody. Look, a kid that comes from the projects, how do you say no to $250 million in the year 2001? Maybe some of your listeners would. I couldn't. I had a responsibility to my mother, to my family, and it was a decision I'm proud of, even though I miss Seattle tremendously. I had tremendous stability there. Fanfare was incredible.
Yeah, so here, you know, post all of that, he's retired. He's been out of the league for a number of years. Now he's saying, well, how do I turn that down?
Right.
That's a very honest answer. You can't turn that down.
Yeah, and not just a guy who grew up with very little. I would say most people who grew up in, like, you know, middle class, had a middle class upbringing, would probably do the same thing. I mean,
what is a quarter of a billion in 2001? What does that equate to in 2024?
Good question.
What would that be?
Yeah, if there's any economists out there, I mean,
I mean,
400 million, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, still today, that's generational wealth.
Yeah,
I mean, it's such an absurd number. It's hard to even contemplate that sitting in front of you going, here you go. And the Rangers at that time spent a truckload on other big-time free agents. They didn't – again, it wasn't like they just had a team full of Schmageggies and Alex.
Yeah.
They were loaded. They didn't achieve their goal, certainly. He won MVPs while he was there. He did his part. But, yeah, so he also talked about how he didn't like how things ended here, but ultimately would love to come back.
And, I'm disappointed that things ended the way they did, and I hope that one day – with new ownership now and management, which I have a very good relationship with. I'm a big supporter of the Mariners. I follow them closely on TV. Obviously, the guys that do your TV work are really, really good. And I hope that one day I get to come back and celebrate, at least thank the great fans of the Mariners for what they did for me.
Yeah, I think it would be pretty cool if he was able to come back and be embraced.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, well, he's a PED cheat. You've had other PED cheats on this team since Alex Rodriguez.
Yeah.
I hate to inform you of that, but you've had a few come through here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who either have or have not gotten caught. Is that what you're saying?
Some are known. I mean, some you knew. Nelson Cruz. Nelson Cruz, one of the greatest guys I've met in sports. I've never equated PEDs with that guy being a bad person.
Sure.
Like Barry Bonds. I never thought he was a bad guy because he cheated. He was a bad guy because he was a creep.
Yeah.
Especially as a player. Holy heck, was he. Ugh. But it wasn't because Jason Giambi got busted. He's one of the nicest guys I've talked to. You know, so it doesn't mean you're a bad person. Yeah, he made some poor choices. He's talked about it. He did that multiple times.
So, and he lied about it.
Yeah.
That's what's so interesting to me about sort of A-Rod's, the evolution of sort of how he's been either accepted or not accepted. I mean, he's back on TV. I mean, he's in this analyst role. It's sort of life has gone on for him on like the national stage, whereas some of these guys who got busted for PEDs, like Roger Clemens, is it fair to say that he's still something of a pariah? In a sense?
No, I mean, he has that tag over him because he was there in Congress, in front of Congress with Palmero, with Sosa, who forgot to speak English, couldn't remember how to do that.
Palmero's waving his finger
And then he turns out he did, and
right. And so my point is, some of those guys are still, I wouldn't say they're generally accepted back into the good graces of sort of the sporting world, whereas Alex Rodriguez very much is, at least in a national sense. And this is a guy who, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't he go on TV and lie about using steroids? And I mean, didn't he deny it before he was caught?
Yeah, he denied it, and then he got caught, and then he did the press conference when he was with the Yankees, where I gave him credit at the time, because at the time he was the only active player to say, yeah, I did it, and didn't offer the, like Andy Pettit got caught. Well, I did it one game, and I was just trying to compete for my team. And everybody had a but. Everybody, yeah. Well, I did it, but. He kind of went out there and said, I knew it wasn't Tic Tacs, was his line.
Right.
It's an interesting dynamic out here with him. We can talk more about that later, but there's still some questions that need to be answered about this Seahawks roster. We're going to get into some of those in Best of the Rest. It's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.